You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Again, everybody, welcome back to the Tell It Avs It Is podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network. I am your host, Griffin Youngs. Hope all my American listeners enjoyed their July 4th weekend, and hope all of my non-American listeners enjoyed their weekend regardless. But welcome back to the Tell It Avs It Is podcast. Before we get into today's episode, first, as always, a word from our sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook. McGregor versus Poirier 3 is all set for UFC 264, and DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC, has a knockout offer for this weekend's fight. DraftKings is offering you 264-1 odds on a knockout in the first round during Saturday's main event. That's right, if this rubber match ends in a first-round knockout, you will be walking away with some incredible cash. Just pick the main event fighter you think will win by first round knockout, and DraftKings Sportsbook will give you 264-1 odds on that fighter. That's right, just $1 on Conor McGregor or Dustin Poirier to win by first round knockout will cash you $264. There is no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to put your money where your mouth is with DraftKings Sportsbook. But don't worry if MMA isn't for you. DraftKings Sportsbook offers great odds and promotions on basketball, hockey, and so much more. And if you're really feeling like the Montreal Canadiens can come back in this final against Tampa Bay, DraftKings has the odds for you if you really feel good about that bet. But DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience with no strings attached. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to turn $1 into $264 when you bet on a main event fighter to win by first-round knockout. Place your bet and watch the fists fly this weekend. That's code THPN to turn $1 into $264 only at DraftKings Sportsbook. So how's everybody doing? Once again, hope you enjoyed your July 4th weekend. Hope you enjoyed it a lot more than I've enjoyed the Stanley Cup Finals as of late, because I cannot remember a time that I have ever been less invested in the Stanley Cup Final. Tampa Bay up 3-0 on the Montreal Canadiens. They are walking to their second straight Stanley Cup championship, and Game 4 is tomorrow, or if you're listening to this on Monday, tonight, and I don't know, maybe Montreal wins, but I just don't care, if I'm being honest. This final's been boring. There's just been no kick to it. There's been no real storylines or anything. It's been Tampa Bay demolishing a completely inferior opponent. I mean, in all respect to the Montreal Canadiens for getting this far, they absolutely deserve to be here. It's just Carey Price has now decided now is a good time to fall back off, and Andre Vasilevsky has done nothing of the sort. And even in Game 3, where Montreal was able to pierce Vasilevsky a few times, it wasn't even close to enough. Tampa Bay in Game 3 wins 6-3. They score 2 goals in every period compared to Montreal's 1. I mean, they're getting goals from Jan Ruta. They got 2 goals from Tyler Johnson. Nikita Kucherov is, I think, having his best series of the playoffs, and he's injured probably in both his hip and his rib right now, based on him almost missing Game 7 of last series. And all respect to Montreal for getting this far, but this series is over. It felt over after 2-0, after Montreal gave them a solid push in Tampa Bay. They outshot them, 43-23, and they still lost 3-1 because Tampa Bay was taking advantage of every single mistake. And if Montreal wasn't going to win game three, obviously a 3-0 series is pretty over, but I think this it would just be a moral victory for them at a certain point to even get this series back to Tampa Bay for a game five, just to say they won one. They won one game on home ice, if nothing else, for the first time since 1993. You don't want to get swept in the final. You want to win one game, make your fans happy for one game, and if you're going to lose, go to Tampa, play your heart out, and just lose there. But you don't want to have them lifting the cup again in your own arena. I mean, one thing I said coming into this series, I don't want there to be another cup won on the road. I mean, the last time a team won a Stanley Cup on home ice was the 2015 Blackhawks, for Christ's sake. I mean, both Penguins Cups were won on the road. The Caps won on the road. The Blues won on the road. Tampa Bay obviously won last year in the bubble. And even they won that in game six, so that would have technically been on the road anyway, even if it was without that being in the bubble. So it's been a while. I'd at least want to see that, because that's at least a cool celebration that it deserves to be at home eventually. But, man, everything that Montreal needed to do right in this series, they haven't done. It's not even like they're playing terribly. It's just Tampa Bay is such an animal. They're juggernauts. They literally cannot be stopped. They have that playoff experience. They have four lines of depth. They have the best goaltender in the world, arguably one of the best defenses in the world. And even an injured Victor Hedman is still one of the best defensemen in the world. There's just like, what are you supposed to do at a certain point? Like, I think Colorado, if they did get past Vegas, I think they would have beaten Montreal and been in this position to play Tampa Bay. Just seeing how Tampa Bay has played against Florida and Carolina and the Islanders and now Montreal, Colorado could have made it a series. They would not be down 3-0 right now, but winning it, I mean, that's a whole nother matter entirely. The Avalanche playing to their best, this would be an outstanding series. Now, I would have belief that they would win. But, I mean, it's a completely irrelevant question anyway. They didn't get past Vegas. They lost in the second round again, so they don't deserve to be there. But I think that, if nothing else, Colorado would have beaten Montreal. It seems like Montreal struggles a little more against those higher ceiling teams. Like Toronto, for as much as we're laughing at them, gave Montreal the most trouble in the first round out of Winnipeg and Vegas. And if Toronto just wasn't a bunch of chokers and could actually finish a series, they probably would have won that series in five. I mean, games five and six of that series went to overtime. If they just like buckled down even just a little bit, just a tad, they would have beaten Montreal. Winnipeg, I don't think, is a very good team, and them getting swept to the Canadiens doesn't feel wrong. I mean, I thought Vegas was going to crush them going in, but you could just see the difference that not having a top-line center in Vegas, a true top-line center, affected them. It's one of the reasons I'm still bothered that we lost to them, because we lost Nazem Kadri, and who knows how that series would have gone if he wasn't an idiot who got himself suspended in a game that was essentially already won at that point against the Blues. But they took advantage of Vegas either getting overconfident or just their lack of depth, or even just exposing Marc-Andre Fleury a little bit and Carey Price playing out of his mind. But I don't know, Vegas isn't exactly... Vegas, make no mistake, what I'm about to say is not saying Vegas isn't good. I feel like this can be misinterpreted. Vegas isn't exactly, like, high-skilled. You know, like I say high skilled, I talk about teams like Colorado and Toronto and like even to an extent Edmonton with McDavid and Draisaitl. Vegas doesn't have that like kind of star power skill. They're a very deep team that plays really well to their system. I wouldn't call them skilled. And I feel like Montreal does well against those kind of teams to a certain extent. Yes, they found a way to shut down the Leafs in the end, but I really think that the Leafs lost that series more than Montreal won it. I think Montreal absolutely destroyed Winnipeg, and they deserved to win that series, and they deserved to beat Vegas as well. I mean, that wasn't a fluke, but getting back to the point, I think Colorado would have beaten this team. Like, going into the series, if Colorado, like, we're right now, we are living in a completely alternate universe right now where Colorado showed up in Vegas and won that series like they should have. But in that universe where everything else is the same except Colorado beats Vegas, going into that series, I would have said Colorado sweeps or in five. Realistically, it probably would have been in six, but I do think we would have beat them. And, like, just with all the high-end skill that we had and everything, and the confidence booster that I think would come from getting past Vegas, I think would carry this team in particular far. I feel like there's a difference between, like, the boost that Vegas got from beating us and the boost that we would have gotten from beating Vegas. I don't know if I'm even making any sense right now, but I feel like Vegas, they're the kind of team that expects to win those series and goes into the next series against Montreal like, oh, well, we just beat Colorado. How could we lose to Montreal? I feel like Colorado would be like, okay, we got past Vegas. We've got one more round to go. We still need to prove ourselves to an extent. Like, I don't know if that makes any sense, but I feel like the boost that would have come from that series, from beating Vegas, would have been different for Colorado. And just the way the roster is constructed, I don't know if Montreal would have been able to keep up with us. I mean, they're not necessarily a fast team. Like, Nick Suzuki, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, and they have young pieces there, but I think players like Shea Weber and a lot of pieces on their defense, like Edmondson and Sherratt. I mean, we've seen sometimes in this Tampa series that the game just goes a little too fast for the Canadiens with the way Tampa Bay plays, and they make mistakes that end up in the back of their net. But anyway, I think Colorado would have beaten this Montreal team if they were just able to turn it on against the Knights and play to their full potential. And beating Tampa, you know, I would have said they would have coming into the playoffs. But just seeing the way that Tampa Bay has played, I'm just not sure. They're such a good team. Like, if they played the exact same way, I mean, Tampa, that is, if they've played the exact same way against Colorado that they have against Montreal in the final, it would probably be 2-1 Tampa right now. I think Colorado would have won game two just with the way they play. I don't know about game three. I think they definitely would have lost game three. Now they look at it with how well Tampa played in that one and just how well they played in game one as well against Montreal. I think this would probably be a 2-1 series for Tampa right now, and we'll see how the rest of the series goes. I mean, I'm talking about, like, the cup's already been handed out. The series isn't over, but it's 3-0. Tampa Bay has not lost a game after losing a game since they got swept against Columbus in 2019. Like, ever since that, they've lost a game in the bubble last year and in the playoffs this year, every single time they followed it up with a win. So even if Montreal wins on Monday, they have to do that 3 more times against a team that has not repeated losses in either of these runs. And that's a tall order, because Tampa Bay, I mean, we can look at it, Tampa Bay is unequivocally the better team. I said coming into this series, or maybe even after game one, I don't remember exactly which one I said this, I think it was after game one, that if Montreal wins this series, they're going to need to get absurdly lucky. And they're not getting that at all. If anything, Tampa Bay is even getting lucky with as much talent as they have here over the Canadiens. We're asking Montreal to win 4 straight games. That's just not going to happen. Even if they win one, that's not going to change anything. It's just going to drag out this season an extra few days. And, I mean, even if they win 2, Tampa's still going to win this. Even if they do that thing where they win 2 in a row and be the first team to beat Tampa after beating them once, they're not going to beat them 3 times, and they're not going to beat them 4 times in a row. It's just, like, this series just became such a mismatch. I think, like, Montreal, they had a great run. It's going to be looked back on with pride. I think they need to play with a lot of pride in Game 4 and at least bring home one game in this series on home ice. But I just haven't been invested in this final. I mean, I've talked for this long about the final. Have I brought up a single storyline? There really isn't one other than Carey Price hasn't been very good. Like, there's... And Carey Price is going to play in Game 4. Like, I thought maybe for a few hours or so that maybe Jake Allen would play Game 4 for Montreal, but there's just nothing here. There's no real interest behind this. Like, I don't know. Even last year, I was like, oh, this is a final. There's storylines here. It went to Game 6. That's fun. There were some overtime games in there. Like, if that was in front of a crowd, that would have been a lot of fun, I think. But I think just because it was in the bubble, it kind of took away a lot of the excitement. This one, I mean, the series has a Canadian team, for Christ's sake, like, for the first time in a decade. And I don't know. I just can't bring myself to care all that much. Maybe that has more to do with just the fact that this season has just felt like a drag for a little bit now. It's such a condensed season with stuff happening almost every day. I kind of just want to get to the off season at this point. I kind of, deep down, as much as I want Tampa to win on home ice, and it's impossible now for Montreal to win on home ice, as much as I want Tampa to win on home ice just for that celebration, I would not care if, like, this series just ends tomorrow or Monday as you're listening to this. Just get this season done and dusted with. Let's move on to the off season. Let's move on to the expansion draft and the regular draft, free agency. Let's get some moves going. I mean, the dam's cracking a little bit. You're hearing rumors every here and there. There's been a trade between Nashville and LA that we'll get to. There's a Duncan Keith trade in the works, as we talked about last episode. There's a that seems like a final candidate for how that's gonna go. There's all this stuff just building and boiling over, like Jack Eichel and all this stuff, like. Even especially with Colorado, all their free agents, like, we're just, it's right there, and this just feels like the last obstacle. Once we get past the final and everything, like listen to how I'm talking about, like, get past the final. Like, that's just how disinterested I've been. Like the last round, the conference, or I guess the semifinal, was great. I was very into those, especially the Tampa Bay and New York series. But this final, like, it just doesn't have any juice to it. Like, I think even after Game 1, when Tampa Bay just blew him out of the water, I was like, yeah, this series is done, isn't it? Like, I had some hope coming in that Montreal would make it fun and make it a series, and, like, I had no doubt Tampa Bay was gonna win. But if Montreal, like, made it a game in Game 1 or something like that, I feel like I would have been more excited. But, just look at the scores of the games in this series, or just the score of the series as a whole. 5-1 Tampa, 3-1 Tampa, 6-3 Tampa. I mean, none of these games have even really been close. There hasn't been, like, even, like, a late winner or pulling away late or anything like that. The closest we've got to that was, I think, the best moment of this series. It has to be the Blake Coleman goal with, like, 2 seconds left in the second period of Game 2. That diving goal on the pass from Barkley Goodrow. That was awesome. I love that. But there just hasn't been that same connection. Even, like, in that same game, it's the third period, it's 2-1, Montreal's playing well, and I found myself just not paying a lot of attention. Like, I was looking at my phone, doing other things. Like, I never doubted for a second that Tampa was going to win the game, and I was right. I mean, then Palat putting the game away late was at least something. But, I mean, even Game 3, I mean, I didn't even get to see the first two goals of that game just because of how much of a mess streaming services are sometimes, but it was 2-0 Tampa pretty much less than 3.5 minutes into the game. So I looked at my phone, and I was like, oh, okay, so this game's over, and it was essentially just background noise for the rest of the time, and, like, poor Carey Price letting in 5 goals on 29 shots. He's just been getting torched. I'm almost afraid to look at his save percentage in this series. It's probably horrific if we look at it, honestly. I'm almost scared to see what his, like, individual save percentages in each game have been. But there were talks that, like, if the series was close, like, Elliot Friedman said that if this series was close, he would give his Conn Smythe vote to Price. And, I mean, that's almost certainly going to be different now and definitely not the case. But, like, that's how good he was coming into this series. I don't know if, like, he was that good. Like, even if Montreal loses the series, he gets the Jaguar treatment that in 2003 with the Ducks and wins the Conn Smythe anyway, even if he's, like, a... on the losing team. I don't think he's been that good even coming into this series, but just what a rough run for Carey Price. I mean, he waited his entire career to even get into the final, and this is how it's going for him. They're down 3-0, and there's really just no hope here outside of, I'd say, the most unlikely comeback in NHL history, which I guess can happen. I mean, it is not a 0% chance that they come back and win this series, I suppose, but I would probably classify it as the biggest comeback in NHL history and more likely than not also the biggest upset in NHL history against the defending heavily favored champs down 3-0 in the final. That would certainly be one hell of a story, and as much as I would love to root for it, it's just not that realistic, honestly. This series is pretty over. We're going to be talking about Tampa as repeating champs probably as soon as Tuesday, and if not Tuesday, then more likely than not, probably Thursday. That's... On the subject of Tampa Bay, is there anything the Avalanche can learn from the Lightning as potential defending champs? Even as of right now, they're one win away from the finals. Is there anything these guys can learn? Well, first and foremost, there's been a certain number of fans that have called for heads of certain players. One thing we can learn from the Lightning is that they got swept in 2009. By the Columbus Blue Jackets in the first round, and everybody was calling for heads of Kucherov, of Stamkos, of a lot of guys. Tampa Bay stuck with it. They ignored all the garbage around that. They stuck with their guys, and now they're on the verge of back-to-back Stanley Cups. But the thing that what changed with this Tampa team was their mindset, was that they started executing better. That's what changed with them. Like, people point to, like, oh, well, they brought in Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow and Pat Maroon, and that changed the identity of this team. No, what changed is Nikita Kucherov putting up back-to-back 30-point playoffs and being the first guy to do that since Gretzky and Lemieux. I think that certainly helped a lot, too. Braden Point scoring 7 straight goals in 7 straight games. They just started executing their systems better. They started playing in a way that is tailored to the playoffs. Like, certain, yeah, guys like Gaudreau and Coleman helped. But Blake Coleman has 3 goals in these playoffs. 2 of them have come in the final, and 1 of them was an empty netter. Barkley Goodrow, I think, has 1, and it came on a very fluky play against the Hurricanes in the second round. And unless I'm mistaken, Pat Maroon has 1, and it came in the first round against Florida. Like, those guys didn't change anything. It came from their core guys stepping up their game to a different level. Guys like Kucherov and Stamkos and Point and even Hedman to an extent. And it doesn't hurt that Andrei Vasilevsky is a 938 in these playoffs and was a 927 last year. So in terms of a lesson that the Avalanche can learn from them, I'd say it's stick with it and have your big guns show up every single night. I mean, to win a cup, the recipe is, I think a lot of people overthink this and like try to find the secret sauce. The recipe to winning a Stanley Cup is to have a really good team. That's the foundation, the base level, if nothing else. Have a good team with 4 lines that you can run out and solid goaltending with a solid defense. I know, groundbreaking analysis, I know. You need to execute your systems to a T in the playoffs. If you don't do that, you're going to get exposed. You've seen that happen to a lot of teams in these playoffs. I can name most of them. I mean, Pittsburgh's biggest weakness against the Islanders was their goaltending. The Islanders exposed that unequivocally. Boston's downfall against the Islanders was that they didn't have a ton of scoring depth. The Islanders exposed that. The Capitals, their thing against Boston in the first round was that they were injured to all hell, and they didn't have a ton of depth, and they weren't very good on defense. Edmonton, they got terribly exposed by Winnipeg for their lack of depth. Toronto, they got exposed for their lack of execution when it counts. Colorado, I think they took their foot off the gas, and Vegas exposed a little bit of a lack of consistency and not executing every single game. So if there's a lesson to be learned from Tampa Bay for Colorado, it's that you can't take your foot off the gas in the playoffs, and you need to be able to roll out four lines, which the Avalanche unequivocally can. They absolutely can roll out four lines, and they could last year. They were good enough to win the cup. Like, I feel like that's been overshadowed now that, like, it was a second round exit and now we're in the final and it's been almost a month now. It gets overshadowed that this team won the President's Trophy and had a real shot at winning the cup. Even if you ran back the exact same roster, I think you still can win a cup with that. There's not a whole lot that needs to change outside of managing the salary cap. What they just need to learn is just executing a little better and just being able to sacrifice a little more in the playoffs. I mean, you're up 2-0 against Vegas. You're a few minutes away from being up 3-0 in that series. And even then, as we all know, they weren't playing great. You lose that game in Game 3. They should have been able to bounce back in Game 4. And they should have been able to go up 3-2 in Game 5. There was just taking the foot off the gas a little bit. Just a little bit. Little mistakes cost them a lot. And in Game 6, Grubauer wasn't great. But they still made a lot of little mistakes. So they need to just, if nothing else, learn from the Lightning, the amount of execution that it takes to win a cup. It doesn't matter if you're up 2-0 or 3-0 or about to be up 3-0. You still need to step on the gas at all costs. Yes, you swept the Blues in the first round. Yes, you're 6-0 after being up 2-0 against Vegas. That doesn't mean that you've won the cup. You're not even halfway there yet. And, you know, it's a valuable lesson that I think this team still needed to learn a bit, and they learned it, and we'll see next year if it sticks. But changing topics a little bit, the Avalanche, they've done nothing since the last episode. There's been a few moves around the league, but in terms of the Avalanche themselves, they have done a big, fat nothing. No updates on Landeskog, no updates on Saad or Jost or Makar or Grubauer or anything, or even just potential moves. The only thing that I have heard is that they are in on Seth Jones, which, look, I gotta be honest, if they overpay, like, they can get Seth Jones. That's not the problem itself. Seth Jones is a fine player, but we need to be real. He's realistically probably either the third or fourth best defenseman on this team, third at best. Realistically, probably fourth. If we're giving up the, like, I read something in The Athletic that a potential package for Seth Jones would be Tyson Jost, Justin Barron, Sampo Ranta, and a first. Yes, I know, that is ridiculous, and they should never do that. Also, the thing is, Seth Jones has 1 year left on his contract, and if you trade for Seth Jones, you're not going to be able to extend him because you're just not going to have the space. Giving up a little bit for Jones as a one-year rental is fine, but you're also going to, like, the bidding war is going to be between teams like Chicago, or I forget who the other teams in on them were. I remember the LA, that's who the other one is. And I think the Flyers were in on him too, if I'm remembering this correct. I don't have it in front of me, but if I remember right, it was Colorado, LA, Philly, and Chicago who were the teams in on Seth Jones right now. All of those teams, Chicago and LA especially, and Philly to an extent too, can trade for Jones with the intention in mind to extend him probably almost immediately. The Avalanche do not have that luxury, so their package is going to be significantly less. So I don't see the fit here with Seth Jones. I also don't think Seth Jones is that player that's going to take you to the next level. And I also don't think that our defense needs that kind of change. Like, I really don't. Between Makar and Taze, like, if you want a bigger body, you can do that. But, like, that's a move you're making to improve your third pairing, if nothing else. Like, your second pairing at most, if nothing else. But to get Seth Jones, I think, would just be a waste of assets. And you're going to have to be trading players and making room to fit a guy that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to even acquire for the Avalanche. Like, I just don't see it. Like, I'm not going to trash Joe Sakic for doing his job and trying to see in what ways he can make his team better. But if he actually goes out and does that, I feel like the mystique of Joe Sakic will kind of be broken for me. Like, there's no way the guy that does the Matt Duchene trade and the Devon Toews trade and the Burakovsky trade also does the Seth Jones trade. I don't doubt he's going to do something big, but just Seth Jones is not the right move. It isn't. It's not the move that the team needs to make right now. Let another team make that mistake and sign him to that big money. It's just, it's not necessary for us to do. There's another much easier way to improve our defense, if it even needs to be improved at all. We've got a logjam on defense as it is right now, as we've talked about before. So we'll see what Sakic has in mind for the offseason, but I'm a little nervous about the Seth Jones rumors, obviously. I just don't like it. He's overrated. I mean, he's not as bad as the analytic community makes him out to be. A lot of the time, he's a perfectly fine player, but he's not like this game breaker that he's made out to be sometimes. He's just not at all. And like everyone points to the game one against Tampa Bay last season in the bubble, where he played like almost 60 minutes in that 5 overtime game. But the thing is, okay, he played all of those minutes, but what happened? It's not like Columbus won that game because of his Herculean effort and him setting a record. They lost. They still lost that game. You can play minutes all you want, but it doesn't matter if you're not really doing anything with them. And the other excuse I've seen recently is that, oh, well, Columbus was a bad team this year, and you can't blame a guy for being on a bad team. Isn't that kind of his responsibility? As being probably like the biggest star on that team outside of the recently acquired Laine? And this Columbus team was not that different from the one that played last year. What changed? I think there is definitely a correlation between Columbus falling off and Seth Jones falling off last year. Like, he's not at all blameless in this situation, and I think that's almost like letting him off the hook to be like, well, Columbus was bad, so it's okay that Jones was also bad. Maybe Jones being bad had a lot to do with it. I think Columbus being bad had a lot to do with Tortorella's stubbornness and over-relying on Merzlikins and Korpisalo, who both had completely unsustainable seasons the year before when they went to the playoff in the bubble. Like, their success in last season in the regular season helped get them to that point, but like that success was unsustainable this season. And man, they should not trade for Seth Jones. It would be a waste of assets, and there's better ways to improve the team for next year, if we're being honest. There's really no need to do a move like that. Jones is a fine player. He's not what the Avalanche need, and he's too expensive. It wouldn't make any sense to do it. So I think they're going to figure it out. It's not going to be Seth Jones. I think a team like Philly is a team that will make that mistake and go out and pay the ransom for Seth Jones and sign him for long-term, and he'll be fine. But Philly, I think, is a team that needs a desperate overhaul and to start moving guys out of there and start to rebuild soon, because they are a roller coaster of a team every single year. So I think the Flyers are going to be the team that makes that move. I don't think Colorado can, just because they can't give Jones that extension, and therefore the package they can give Columbus, even if they wanted to do it, would be insufficient in itself. I just don't think it makes a whole lot of sense for them to do, and I think they should move on. But, I mean, some of these moves are going to break eventually. I mean, this offseason, no matter what happens, can't be boring. We had one move already with Victor Arvidsson going from Nashville to L.A., and the Duncan Keith trade seemingly around the corner. There's just so much ready to boil over at any moment. I think this offseason is going to be great. And Victor Arvidsson going to L.A. is a great trade for the Kings and a terrible trade for the Nashville Predators. I don't really understand this. I mean, I understand it, but the return they got is not enough. It makes me wonder why you even bothered in the first place. I mean, Nashville needs to build, like rebuild a little bit. They've been, ever since they went to the Stanley Cup final in 2017, they've been kind of floundering. They won the President's Trophy the next season, and then they lost in the second round. They lost to Dallas in the first round the next year. They lost to Arizona in the qualifying round in the bubble, and they put up a fight against Carolina this year, but they were a few losses away from rebuilding at the deadline. And Victor Arvidsson has fallen off a little bit in recent years due to injuries and things like that. He's 28 now, and he's signed for 3 more seasons right now. I get why they traded him, and also for some Seattle protection, just so Seattle can't take him or someone else for free. But, I mean, a second and a third is not going to do anything. And Philip Forsberg's reaction to the trade, to me, was very interesting, with the thumbs down on his Instagram story and everything immediately after the trade breaks. That's obviously what it was about. But Arvidsson struggled with a lot of injuries in the past. I mean, this kind of strikes me as like a light version of the Burakovsky trade for Colorado, except for LA. I mean, LA is obviously not where Colorado was when they made the Burakovsky trade, and Arvidsson's older than Burakovsky was, but it feels like a similar-ish situation, similar return. And the Kings are going to, I think they're going to be a solid team next year. That Pacific Division next year, barring some incredible off seasons for certain teams, is going to stink. That is going to suck. That is going to be one bad division. Vegas, if you could, the second you can place futures bets, put money on Vegas to win the Pacific Division, because there is literally no competition for them. It's probably Vegas and probably a 3-mile gap, then maybe Edmonton for second. And like that third spot, like that can be LA right now, even if the Arvidsson move is the only move that they make, just because I think a lot of their prospects are going to come in next season and be really solid for them. And Kopitar was a great last year. I think that's a solid team in LA. The Arvidsson trade's only going to help them, and their incredible prospect core is only going to help them build further. And next year, they can realistically make the playoffs. As for Nashville, I think this team's falling off a bit. I think they fell off this season, got carried by UC Soros to the playoffs, and now they need to build or rebuild a bit, trade Ekholm, see if they can get out from Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene. It'd be interesting to see what happens with Philip Forsberg, though. He's entering the final year of his contract. He's 26, obviously one of the better players on the Predators. If they really do go rebuild, Forsberg is probably going to be the guy out the door. And, I mean, if Nashville wants to retain half and we can give them a solid package for Forsberg, like, I don't know what that package would even look like, or if Nashville even wants to trade him, but that could be an interesting target for the Avalanche, now that I'm just thinking out loud about it. Be interesting to see what Nashville does this offseason. I really think they need to restock that prospect cupboard, and just, I think this core is done. They went to their final, they won their President's Trophy, and they're not to suggest that they're gonna do anything past this is just, they're lying to themselves at that point. David Poile would just be lying at that point. And the other move, well, it's not really a move because it hasn't happened yet, but the other rumor going around right now is it seems like Duncan Keith is going to be heading to Edmonton pretty shortly. And I got to be honest, I don't know what the hell Edmonton's doing with this, if that is the case. I mean, Duncan Keith has a full no movement clause. He can control where he goes. And like Edmonton finally has some cap space to work with this offseason. They have $16 million in cap to work with this offseason, and you're going to waste valuable cap space on Duncan Keith? This only makes sense if the Oilers are getting a return for taking on Duncan Keith. I mean, first and foremost, Chicago needs to be retaining half of Keith's 5.5 salary for the next 2 years for this to even be feasible for the Oilers. And it sounds like, well, the Blackhawks want Caleb Jones in return to help them entice Seth Jones to come to Chicago. Like, okay. Edmonton loses this trade by default if they give up anything. I think we talked about this a little last episode, but Duncan Keith is washed. I mean, he's 37. I mean, in his prime, he was an outstanding defenseman, but he's in the final 2 years of a 13-year contract, and granted a contract that helped them win two more Stanley Cups, but he's 37, his analytic metrics are horrible, the guy borderline just can't even move anymore, and Edmonton giving up anything in this trade is an automatic loss for them. They can take on Keith. I mean, he has his uses, he has his experience, and he'd be a great leadership figure on that blue line. If they retain half, I mean, that's, what, 2.25 for your third-pairing defenseman? I mean, if the Blackhawks and the Oilers are smart, they could even bring Seattle in on this and get them to retain another half of that salary and bring that down to probably be about a little more than $1 million for Duncan Keith. At that point, that makes perfect sense for Edmonton. Seattle can get another draft pick in return, and Chicago can be rid of that cap hit for the most part. But outside of that, this just doesn't make a ton of sense if the Oilers are giving up anything, especially Caleb Jones. I mean, Caleb Jones is nothing special. Like, he's not like a deal breaker. He's not like going to be a ton in the NHL. He's 24. He was a fourth-round pick in 2015, played 33 games last year, 4 assists, -7. I'm going to be honest, I don't really know much about this guy. I've seen him play a few times, but he's a guy, basically. He plays. I mean, that's really as much as you can say about him. He has potential to be a little more, but Edmonton should be getting assets in return for taking on Keith, especially if they're giving them Caleb Jones. Like, Chicago should be giving them probably picks as well and probably something else in order to get this deal done. Otherwise, it just straight up makes no sense for the Oilers. They don't have to do this. Like, they don't have to take Duncan Keith just because the Pacific Northwest is where he wants to go. They don't have to do that. They can pretty much set their own market here with the no movement clause for Keith. So, I mean, the move hasn't happened yet. Maybe this will all fall apart and this never happens and Keith stays in Chicago. But if this is true and Edmonton's really working on getting him, I really just don't understand where that would be coming from at all. But outside of that, there's really not a ton going on right now in the NHL world outside of the Stanley Cup final. The Toronto Maple Leafs set the record for the longest Stanley Cup drought in NHL history. If you want to read my article on that, you can go to fansided.com/NHL. It should be the most recent one up there as of right now, as I'm recording this. They set the record, what was the exact day again? 19,786 days since they last won the Stanley Cup. Last won in 1967. Longest Stanley Cup final drought during that time. Second longest playoff win drought at 16 seasons. I bet it's real fun to be a Leafs fan right now watching Montreal in the final. Even if Montreal is getting embarrassed, at least they're there in the final right now. But outside of all that, seems like things are kind of starting to boil over with the offseason, and maybe once this final wraps up, we can start see moves pouring in more and more every single day. But until then, we still just have to wait. But that's going to do it for this edition of the Tell It Abs It Is podcast. Could be the final one of the NHL season with games going on, depending on if Tampa Bay wraps up the sweep on Monday. And when would be the next game? Wednesday. So if Montreal wins on Monday, there will probably be another episode. I mean, I'll be recording it the day of the game, so it might come out, if Tampa Bay wins game 5, it might come out the day after. But anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. I have been your host, Griffin Youngs. Hope you have a great week, and I will talk to you all later this week. Have a wonderful day.